Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday once again. Today with us, Hans Hassel, Assistant Professor of Politics at Cornell College in Mount Vernon in our Iowa City studio. Hello, Hans.
Hello.
Kedrin Bardwell joins us by phone, Professor and Department Chair of Political Science at Simpson College. Hi, Kedrin.
Good to be with you, Ben.
Great to have both of you with us, and we want to have our listeners active today. A good part of the program. A little bit later, we'll get to some other things first of all, but we'll be talking about what is anticipated tomorrow in the hearing. James Comey, the fired FBI director, reaching out to you this hour. What questions do you hope will be answered by James Comey tomorrow? And let me tell you that tomorrow IPR will be carrying NPR's live coverage of that testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, beginning at 9 o'clock Central Time. It's 9 o'clock our time until about noon is the expectation. Of course, that can change. And then at noon, of course, River to River will have analysis, more analysis. Actually, Donna Hoffman and Dennis Goldford will be joining us in the second half hour tomorrow, slated for a live conversation with Senator Charles Grassley. So, of course, we'll be getting hopefully his reaction to the testimony of James Comey as well. Let's concentrate on this hour. Before we do get to your thoughts, Kedrin and Hans, about the coming testimony of James Comey, let's talk about that bountiful basket of other political news that is here. We won't get to all of it, but let's talk about President Trump's announcing today via Twitter that he would nominate Christopher Wray to serve as the next FBI director. Our president tweeted that Wray is a man of, quote, impeccable credentials. And, of course, an appointment that still has to be confirmed by the Senate. So it's a highly anticipated nomination. What do you make of this choice, Kedrin?
Well, it's what we call in the communications world counterprogramming. Counterprogramming is when some large event is happening and you want to maybe steal some of the attention or distract from what's going on somewhere else, and so you announce a new FBI nominee. Kind of too early to say. I haven't dug much into the background other than I do know that he was a personal lawyer for Chris Christie during the Bridgegate scandal. Seems to be highly qualified, a longtime member of the department. So I think the optics of this are just a little bit different because we're not used to presidents announcing major nominees via Twitter. And as we learned with this president, this is just another way that he communicates. So I don't think we make too much of the fact about the way that he did it. Maybe we focus more on what are the questions that are going to come up about this personal this person's personal background during the hearing.
Yeah, well, what comes to mind for you as far as, of course, an intense scrutiny on this nominee once those hearings roll around? First and foremost, what would you say, Kedrin?
Well, I think the first thing you need in this kind of scenario, especially because the optics around some of the judicial and intelligence agencies has become so polarized, is that you need someone who's trusted, someone who has the respect of people across both sides of the aisle. And I think that would be, you know, a wise choice for the administration to pick someone that wouldn't create other distractions in terms of background. And I don't know enough about this Bridgegate scenario and what he did in that case to say that that will or won't be an issue. But I think just because the environment now is just so caustic in terms of any new official being announced to fill any position, that I think they need to see, you know, what people like Grassley say, what others in the intelligence community say, what people across the aisle say, and what questions they have on his record.
Hans, back to the timing issue, it's pretty hard to overshadow the Comey hearings with what we would call on the landscape a much smaller object, even though in normal times it would be a big thing to appoint or nominate a new FBI director. Do
yeah,
I have that right?
I think it is hard to overshadow when what's ongoing in the news, but I think that there is some hope that this will occupy, like it is right here, right now, here on the radio, that it will occupy some conversation, like Andrew said. One of the things that to me that's interesting about this, however, is that what does this mean in terms of who's got the president's ear now, right? So I've seen some some reports suggesting that this was not the preferred choice of many of the staff in the administration. And so this makes you wonder, right, who's got the president's ear? What sort of power dynamics are there going on within the White House, and how does Trump get to this? I mean, this is Christie's former lawyer, like Kendren said, and so what does that mean? Does that mean that there was a falling out with Chris Christie in the administration at one point, right? Jared Kushner apparently pushed him out at some point. Does this mean that dynamics more connected to Christie have perhaps won Trump's ear a little bit more, and that might be significant in terms of the policy or the actions that we see down the road?
Mm-hmm. We have several investigations, multiple investigations going on. So this new FBI director, how does that fit into this context of what's going on with the Russia probe in the House, in the Senate, the new the separate special counsel by former FBI Director Robert Mueller? It's quite a complicated tangle now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the FBI has continued to in their investigation. You've also got the counsel that was appointed by the Department of Justice, the independent counsel that's looking into that aspect. And so I think that, like you said, it's going to take a while for Ray to get into that position because of the necessity of confirmation and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. But
now with the special counsel, though,
exactly.
Though
yeah.
he this new FBI director will be necessarily distancing himself from that, not have anything to do with that?
Yes. Yeah, so the special counsel was appointed by the Department of Justice, right? So this is an independent counsel, not connected with the FBI or directly connected to the Trump administration. So this is supposedly, right, the idea is an independent counsel.
Its line goes above to the Justice Department.
Yes, that's correct, right? So it's not connected to the FBI, but the FBI may still be collecting information. I mean, we're not sure what sort of investigations they're doing into the hacking scandal by Russian forces, or, you know, for Russian intelligence agencies.
Well, Kedron and Hans, let's talk a little bit about that. The latest revelations about Russia's meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. This week, a U.S. intelligence contractor charged with leaking to a news organization classified NSA material about Russian interference in the election. On Monday, the Justice Department charged a Reality Winner with removing classified material. I think it was only one page from a government facility in Georgia. These charges announced less than an hour after The Intercept, that is the publication, published a top-secret document from the NSA that described Russian efforts to launch cyber attacks on at least one U.S. voting software supplier, send targeting emails. These are the phishing emails that try to trick we've all gotten these and try to trick you into clicking on a malicious link to steal your data. In this case, to steal the data from more than 100 local election officials days before last November's election. Now, we want to make clear this new material so far does not suggest that actual votes were manipulated. I don't think it rules those out, does it, Kedron?
No, it doesn't necessarily rule that out, but we have limited information right now on just from that one document. So the thing I would be looking for in the future is maybe the larger picture, which is how does this affect the number of leaks that are coming out of the administration and the different intelligence agencies? Is this person going to be made an example of the system? Typically, I've heard that you can get as much as 10 years, but typically maybe 1 to 3 years, will she get some jail time as a crackdown on this type of behavior to try to make sure it doesn't happen in the future? So that's the one thing I would watch for, is just what happens to this person, and does it shut down the leaky sieve of information coming out of the intelligence agencies?
Mm-hmm. To the other question, certainly any leak of a top secret document is a serious crime if that was committed in this case. What about the implications of the Russians knocking on the door, trying to probe, trying to penetrate software responsible for counting our votes, tallying the votes?
I hope their phishing emails were something like the Nigerian prince ones that we get all the time, right? I hope they were that bad, but I'm sure that they were more complicated than that. But it's hard to, from this one document to know exactly what they were aiming for, whether this was to try to disrupt the voting system, whether this was just an effort to kind of discredit the elections so that there would be chaos within the United States, right? That, I mean, I think that we often think of, oh, no, the Russians are going to change the outcome of the election. That's not necessarily what they need to do for us to cause confusion and cause problems in the democracy in the United States. All they need to do is sow doubt. All they need to do is to have the United States public doubtful about the veracity or the validity of the outcome, and that will be enough to, you know, cause enough chaos that may allow them to do other things that without getting noticed. Right, this might be like Kenan was saying earlier. This might be counter-programming. Right, they're doing this not necessarily because they want to disrupt this outcome, but because this information allows Russians to then go do something else without perhaps those actions being drawn attention to.
Well, maybe they have several aims here. One of the aims, don't we have our U.S. intelligence agencies have a consensus about, you know, putting their finger on the scale on the side of Donald Trump's campaign by discrediting Hillary Clinton? This is a consensus in our intelligence community. Perhaps what that would maybe a primary aim, and if we don't get that, we sow confusion.
I think that's right. I think we look at this. I think if we only say that the only thing we're concerned about is whether or not votes were changed or if election outcomes were changed, then we are missing, I think, the point. Or the point here is that any sort of doubt and confusion or questioning the validity of the vote or causing chaos within the electoral system, that's a positive thing for the Russians, right? Mm-hmm. This allows them more freedom to go and do what they're interested in doing. And if it elects the person that they want elected, great. But really, I think there's a lot of benefit for them just by causing confusion in the system.
Interestingly enough, our president, during his campaign and after the campaign, sowed doubt in our electoral system as well by claiming something like 3 million fraudulent votes cast, no evidence to support that. I don't know, just coming to mind, is there a tie-in? It seems both are casting doubt on our electoral system. Kedron.
Well, I think Trump's doing that for the purposes of strengthening the essentially his partisan defense. What he's been able to do pretty successfully in the first several months of his administration is to take advantage of the existing polarization in the country and use that strong partisan identity to sow doubt in a number of institutions that might be roadblocks to his agenda, whether that's the courts or certain parts of the bureaucracy, you know, the so-called deep state, the people who are existing holdovers from other administrations or career officials in different agencies that might block his agenda. So, you know, I think it's part of a larger strategy by Trump to sow some of these doubts so that when you get to a point where he needs the support of that base, he can rally them and say, well, that information you got from the media or from someone leaked, that's discredited. What you need to do is trust me.
Mm-hmm. Kedron Bardwell is with us of Simpson College, Hans Hassel of Cornell College, Politics Wednesday. Plenty to pick apart here with our analysts. Join our conversation, especially if you'd like to, you know, tomorrow, are you going to be glued to your radio, your TV, your internet streaming? We'll have it here on IPR, live coverage of the testimony of James Comey before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence tomorrow between 9 a.m. and noon. And this program will follow that as well with analysis, and we have scheduled Senator Charles Grassley to be on this hour tomorrow as well. Before we go to a caller, Hans, did you want to join in there?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that there's something about collective action. I think Kenan is exactly right. Right, I'm not sure necessarily that this is proof of collaboration between the Russians and the Trump campaign. They may have the same. They may have the same purpose, but may not necessarily be working together. Right? I think that Trump's incentive to sow doubt into the veracity or the validity of the election results may be entirely different. And just because they're doing the same thing doesn't necessarily mean that they're coordinating or actually and working together.
Mm-hmm. Well, now on let's listen to this. Now on NBC News, Megyn Kelly a few days ago met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in St. Petersburg. This is the Russian president's hometown and the nation's one-time capital. When asked about Russian interference in the 2016 election, he said that people in the U.S. have been misled. they're not analyzing the information in its entirety, and that he hasn't seen any direct evidence of Russian interference in the presidential election. When asked by Megyn Kelly about his relationship with Trump and whether the Russian government was has damaging information on the U.S. president, here's what Vladimir Putin said, spoken through an interpreter.
Well, this is just another load of nonsense. Where would we get this information from? Why did we have some special relationship with him? We didn't have any relationship at all. There was a time when he used to come to Moscow, but you know, I never met with him. We have a lot of Americans who visit us. Right now, I think we have representatives from 100 American companies that have come to Russia. Do you think we're gathering compromising information on all of them right now or something? Have you all lost your senses over there?
Okay, Russian President Vladimir Putin. I don't know if Kedron, you or Hans saw that entire interview. I did not.
I didn't see the whole thing, but it reminds me of this idea. Lindsey Graham spoke this a couple of days ago. You know, did Trump or someone in his campaign collude with Russia? Did he even collude with his own staff? You know, these last few days, the communication and kind of the organization has been so inefficient and so off message in the White House. It kind of lends discredit some of these larger conspiracies, I think, in the minds of many people, that there could have been some kind of intricate deal or organization or collusion between Trump himself and Putin or Russian officials.
Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Nick. Nick is listening in Des Moines. Hi, Nick. What's on your mind as you chew over the latest political news?
Oh, yes. Thanks for taking my call. I look at kind of expanding on the point of what one of your commentators was talking about was when we look at Reality Winner's leaked document, it's the only piece of official evidence as of now from an anonymous source that seems to almost put in the position that it's more the Trump campaign's ineptness and the Russians' ability to try and I hesitate to use the word influence, but I would definitely use the word disrupt the election cycle. And I think one thing that's interesting as well is that from the FBI, I believe they were discussing that Russia didn't necessarily influence Trump in a meaningful direction, but they did disrupt the campaign and the election process. And so I'd be really curious to talk about, do you think that this leaked document, if it's the first confirmed document that we have out there now, that affirms more so the ineptness and kind of that communication error between Trump and his, I believe, as kind of a media. I mean, he's very smart in creating entertainment, but as far as his communication with his team, it seems like there's a lot of general confusion. And so, again, going back to that grand scheme, I think would be a really interesting topic to maybe discuss more when we look at Reality Winner's leaked document.
Okay, who wants to tackle that, Kedron or Hans? Jump in.
Yeah, I can take that. One of the things I was thinking about with that document and with the leaks in general is that this is such a double-edged sword. On the one hand, we do want to know this stuff. You know, we want to know if Russian officials are, for example, trying to fish or to hack state and local elections. And that's important information, and Senator Warner kind of mentioned this in his comments on it. You know, we need to know, and maybe we should even know, you know, what software that was targeted and how many states is it used in and what are those states, because that would give state officials the information they need to maybe know that they were compromised and combat these types of attacks in the future. At the same time, Warner said we have to crack down on this. You can't have willy-nilly people within not just the administration, but then contracted agencies, which is who Reality Winner worked for, was basically a contractor for the NSA. You can't have them leaking this type of information out there, not just because it could be damaging to national security, but also that it could forestall existing or interrupt existing investigations into the actual hack. So, it's a really a trade-off here between the transparency of wanting to know this information if something untoward went on, but realizing that can sometimes undermine an official reaction or investigation to it.
Nick, thanks for your question, your observation from Des Moines. 1-866-780-9100. Kedron Bardwell of Simpson College with us. Hans Hassel of Cornell College. Let's talk a little bit about tomorrow. Tomorrow, a big day in Washington. A lot of a focus there. We're trying to recall. I couldn't recall the last time so much media attention has been given to a political event in Washington. Perhaps the Benghazi hearings. You mentioned, Hans, before we got started here, I was thinking Ollie North or one of the hearings before the Supreme Court. But we'll have live coverage of former FBI directors James Comey's testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence tomorrow from 9 a.m. until noon. Let's listen here to James Comey. This is back in March, at the end of March, during a question and answer session when he was still in office, then FBI Director James Comey, saying that his agency makes its decisions on a nonpartisan basis. He said he doesn't care about the political backlash of the choices he makes. Let's listen to this.
The last year, it's been almost a year now, has been easier than you might think. And I'll tell you, I've never been prouder of the FBI. What makes it easy is we're not on anybody's side ever. We're not considering whose ox will be gored by this action or that action, whose fortunes will be helped by this or that. We just don't care, and we can't care. We only ask, so what are the facts? What's the law? What's the right thing to do here? Most people see the world differently than we do, especially in a hyper-partisan environment. Most people are wearing glasses that filter the world according to side. And this is a challenge I face when I testify in front of Congress, and it's not a criticism of Congress. They see facts as to how it will affect my side. How does that argument affect my side? And when they encounter people, and I'm just one of 37,000 that are like this at the FBI, who never consider side, it's confusing.
Okay, James Comey, back in March, who knows if he had inklings then about being fired as he was so abruptly by President Trump. Kedrin, what do you think there when you hear James Comey talking about you just got to walk down the line, not think about how it may affect, even though the people asking you questions, they're going to be thinking in partisan terms. You don't do that, and it makes it a bit easier. Do you think he'll be in that mode tomorrow?
Well, I think he'll be in that mode. Let me just say that there's some polling out recently that shows that Trump's been fairly successful in tarnishing Comey's reputation. Although most Americans don't necessarily trust what Trump says about why he fired Comey in relation to the Russia investigation, there's also, as I said, some pretty hardcore doubt among Republican and conservative partisans in Comey's credibility. So Trump has succeeded to some extent in diminishing that. At the same time, I think, look back, as Comey said, over the last year, it seems he really hasn't cared whose ox is gored. Remember, he was originally George Bush appointee. He then took these actions during the course of the campaign, first in the summer and then right before the election, that seemed to hurt Hillary Clinton. And now we're talking about whether he's, in these actions hurting Donald Trump. So I think his record actually makes the point for him that he hasn't really cared, about the political impact of some of it that's taken publicly.
Okay, Kedrin, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back with Kedrin Bardwell of Simpson College, Hans Hassel of Cornell College. Join us with your questions. What do you hope will be answered by James Comey tomorrow? We'll be covering it live from 9 to noon here on Iowa Public Radio. When we come back, I'll ask our guests what they'll be listening for first and foremost in the testimony of James Comey tomorrow. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, Senator Chuck Grassley is scheduled to join us live in the second half hour of the noon hour. 24 hours from now, we'll be chewing over very early on the testimony scheduled for public testimony, that is, 3 hours by James Comey, the fired FBI director. It will go into closed session in Washington in the afternoon hours. So we'll certainly ask Senator Grassley about his initial reactions. We'll also have on hand Donna Hoffman and Dennis Goldford, two of our other political analysts, to give us their analysis of the Comey hearing tomorrow, carried live here on Iowa Public Radio NPR's live coverage of that testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Before we do get to talk about expectations for the Comey hearing, let's go back to our phones. Last hour, we're talking about the further revelations in the Russia investigation. Dean is with us from Lincoln, Nebraska. Glad to have you with us, Dean. What's on your mind as we turn back to what we discussed the last half hour and Russian meddling, not only in our media, leaking emails, but at least attempting to probe through phishing to get into software companies that operate our voting system?
Yeah, good morning, or afternoon, I should
sure.
say. I was just thinking, you know, Putin was on the Megyn Kelly show the other day, and I was wondering why he's given any credibility in the United States when he's a former KGB spy, and his statements contradict our own investigators' finding of the Russian influence on our election process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Hans, what do you think of that question?
I think that's a great question. It's a good insight. This is what we would, in political science, call cheap talk, right? It's talk that has no consequences for him, right? He's not running for election here in the United States, and so he has no constituents to please. The statements don't necessarily have to be grounded in reality because there's not a consequence for lying here for him. And so I think that that's exactly right. And he has all the incentive to misrepresent Russian positions because it enables them to have more credibility in the world. It's like a dictator who holds a sham election, right? You have the pretense of some sort of democratic process while at the same time enjoying all the benefits.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dean in Lincoln, Nebraska, for that call and email. I'll read here. I don't see a name attached to it, anonymous email. Trump says the Russian interference is fake news. Monday's leak of NSA info proves the U.S. government has proof of specific attempts of hacking election officials. I would like to know, writes the listener, if types of this specific proof have been provided by national security advisors to the president prior to the president's misinformation. So they're pointing out, Trump says, this is fake news, but the intelligence is there. Hans, you jump in.
I think that if you listen to what Trump says about Russian influence in the election, he always seems to say there's no evidence that Russia changed votes or increased the vote totals or changed vote counts. And that's true. That's true. There isn't any evidence of that. Instead, what we see is Russian influence in the media. We see Russian influence trying to in some way disrupt the system, to discredit vote counting in some way. What Trump has said about Russian influence in the election has generally been correct, but the idea here is that he's misdirecting us towards what is true, but missing the larger picture.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the testimony tomorrow. Kedron Bardwell, you start us off before the Senate Intelligence Committee as part of this ongoing Russia probe, the long-anticipated public, and we want to differentiate that from what's going to be happening privately, which we won't obviously hear a lot about. What will you be listening for tomorrow, Kedron?
Well, I think most people will be listening for this specific conversation that happened as Trump invited Comey to the White House for dinner, and they were alone, and asked him essentially about the investigation. According to Trump's own telling of it, asked him whether I'm under investigation, and Trump reported that Comey said, no, you are not directly under investigation. And there was a conversation essentially about whether Comey could, quote, let this go. And that's according to Comey's notes that we have available at this time. So the question is going to be, I think, two things. Number one, what was the content of that conversation and how far did it go toward Trump essentially either asking him to call off the dogs or to take some sort of loyalty oath toward Trump? And the other question is, how much will Comey actually say?
Mm-hmm.
As we've said before, we have this special counsel. We have Mueller working on taking over all the investigations that had existed, the FBI, the Justice Department, and the attorneys, U.S. attorneys. And so although Comey is no longer a public official, there's still some question as to how forthcoming he'll be in light of this continuing investigation, how forthcoming he'll be publicly about exactly the words that were said. But the fact that he's showing up is a positive sign that we're going to get some information or insight into that specific conversation about his loyalty and the pursuit of the investigation.
So far, what we know about those conversations has come from the president, but also from anonymous sources quoting Comey's supposedly specific notes after those meetings with the president. So, Hans, what if the story is confirmed? All these anonymous sourced stories about what actually happened, that under oath, James Comey says that's all true. That all happened. I was asked for a loyalty oath, and I knew what that meant. And I also knew what it meant when the president said, let this go.
Well, I think it's important not just to look at the actual words that are spoken, but also the context. So Susan Collins recently came out saying that she's very interested in this hearing, not just for whether or not these reports are true, but to trying to get a little bit more of context on what the situation was, right, how serious these sorts of requests were. And I think that you're not going to see a change in the how things are going, I think, right now. I don't think you're going to all of a sudden see Trump's popularity soar. I also don't think you're going to see it tank among Republicans. And so I'm not sure that this Comey testimony is actually going to change a whole lot on Capitol Hill. All it's going to do is I think what Kendra says, is confirm the reports that we've heard, or kind of shed a little bit more light onto that situation. I don't think you're going to see a fundamental kind of radical change in how politics are going in Washington right now as a result of this.
Mm-hmm. An FBI director could certainly be asked the question whether he believes the president's actions were an obstruction of justice. That legal term, Kedren, we have to believe he'll be asked that, don't we?
Absolutely. And that really gets to the heart of the matter, is the question of obstruction. And that's why Susan Collins in her comments was getting at, well, we need the context because we need to know what the president's intent may be. And Comey can't really tell us Trump's intent. Trump has to speak to that. But I would draw us back to the fact that Trump seems to have largely confirmed the idea that he fired Comey because of the Russia investigation. Remember that just a wild interview he had with NBC's Lester Holt,
mm-hmm.
Where he said, in fact, when I decided to fire him, I said to myself, you know, this Russia thing is Trump and Russia is a made-up story. So in a sense, we're not going to get Hans is right. We're not going to get something new here. I think we're just going to get, well, are the notes that have leaked to the press from Comey, are they accurate? Is that a good telling of what happened?
But
in a larger sense, Trump has really spoken to this already in saying that was the reason that he fired Comey.
If that's what we get and we don't get any other new revelations, what difference does that make?
Well, I mean, I think that the Democrats listening are hoping that this testimony all of a sudden starts this series of proceedings that end up in impeachment and conviction.
Dominoes or something.
Yeah, this is the first domino to fall that will lead us into a President Pence rather than a President Trump. And I just don't see that happening, right? I just don't see, right, because we have these partisan glasses on, that Republicans are going to change. I don't see Democrats changing, and so in short, what you're going to see either a slow eroding of support, or you're going to see nothing happening really at all, and you're not going to see any sort of change in the politics of today until we get to 2019, and Democrats can just hope to win a majority in the House, or maybe win a few seats in the Senate to have a majority in both of those houses, and then you could possibly see some sort of impeachment hearings. But you're not going to see changes in the political. You're not going to see an impeachment proceedings, I think, as a result of this Comey
hearing. Will we hear the I word tomorrow from Democrats? I guess I don't think we'd hear it from Republicans. That would be news.
Yeah, I mean,
but will Democrats broach that area, Kedren? Because that is a risky proposition, right? To get ahead of what is actually there, supported by facts.
Yeah, I would agree. We all need to kind of take a breath, and I'd say this of myself and analysts, and then also people on both sides, and say, let the information come out. Let the special counsel do his work, with that team and see what happens. It's really a small number of Democrats that I've seen on the House side that have even mentioned the I word and talked about this as a path to something like that. And you're right also that we need to be thinking of the lessons of recent history here. We had just several years ago an attempted impeachment of a president that included the exact same charge, obstruction of justice, as one of the potential charges. And that didn't go so well for those that were pushing the impeachment. In fact, there was a blowback, and President Clinton's approval went up almost 20 points. Mm-hmm. So, there is that kind of pendulum swinging type effect with how polarized politics is today, where you need some controlled middle in terms of deciding and analyzing what should be done, because either side, its extremes will take you into dangerous territory where the party might actually suffer blowback for going too far.
Yeah, so I think one of the things to think about, too, is Democrats want this to stay in the agenda without perhaps actually culminating in something so drastic as impeachment, right? Because they're not going to get a conviction here based on the politics, based on the situation. They're not going to get Trump out of office. So I think the Democratic strategy here is try to keep this in the news media as long as possible so that all of this other agenda that Republicans want to try to enact isn't possible to enact because Trump's so unpopular or because of a variety of other things.
Okay. A number of other things we could talk to in regards to the Comey testimony, but let's move on for now because we're running out of time. Once again, we'll have live coverage of James Comey's testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence tomorrow live here on Iowa Public Radio from 9 in the morning until it's expected around noon. Senator Grassley joining us for part of the noon hour, so you'll want to tune in tomorrow to that. Let's touch on health care. Where things stand for Republicans making good on that campaign promise to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act with something that goes under the acronym, the ACHA. Party leaders, if we remind ourselves, back in January, GOP party leaders outlined how President Trump would have signed legislation to repeal and replace the ACA. This was to have happened months ago, right? By now, early June, correct me if I'm wrong, Hans and Kedren, we were supposed to be in the thick of overhauling the tax code. We know we aren't there. We know we aren't even close to being there. Let's listen to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell telling a news conference yesterday that a small group of Senate Republicans are getting closer to producing a health care bill of their own, that a vote may take place by July 4th.
Let me just start by saying we had another of our ongoing discussions about the way forward on health care at a meeting earlier, and then throughout our luncheon discussion, we're getting closer to having a proposal that we'll be bringing up in the near future. I'm not going to go into the various component parts of the health bill. We believe we can do better than the status quo. We don't think you can have the status quo. It's unsustainable. Senator Barrasso pointed out all the collapsing markets all across the country. Doing nothing is not an option. And so we intend to go forward. We think we can do better than the status quo, and we'll be talking about that soon.
Okay, juxtapose that from Senate Majority Leader McConnell with this. About a week and a half ago, CNN Chief Political Correspondent Dana Bash asked New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, Democrat, of course, if he has reached out to any Republican senators to formulate a bipartisan solution for the future of Obamacare. He said he's had a lot of conversations with representatives in both houses and is frustrated.
And what passed out of the House of Representatives, we now see what the CBO said, is a disastrous piece of legislation that would put tens of millions of Americans' health care in peril. And then on top of that, giving the wealthiest amongst us tax breaks to yank health care away completely from some of the most vulnerable of our citizens, seniors and children. So this is a craven, what we've seen is a craven efforts on the House, amongst the House Republicans, and now it doesn't seem like there's a climate in the Senate to doing the right thing, which is keeping health care for millions of Americans, taking the advancements we've made under the Affordable Care Act and making them better in a bipartisan way. That's what I'm hoping we eventually get to, at least in the United States Senate.
New Jersey Senator Cory Booker about a week and a half ago. So where do we stand now? Kedren, start us off. What's standing in the way of the Republicans getting this through the Senate, somehow meshing it with what the Republicans in the House passed now several weeks ago?
Yeah, I think that the main thing to think about here is the context of the Senate. The lead that the Republicans have in terms of a vote margin is smaller in the Senate. Essentially, they really only have a couple votes to lose in terms of some of their more moderate members. There's a larger and I think more influential, as a percentage terms, larger group of moderate Republicans in the Senate who are very concerned about what's happening with things like the possible rollback of the Medicaid expansion, who are concerned about making sure that people with pre-existing conditions are covered. So I think the range and the possibility is actually even narrower in the Senate than it was in the House in terms of getting something done. And recall that all the wheels are moving trying to get something done on this at the same time that this was supposed to be Infrastructure Week. And we were supposed to be working on tax reform over the summer.
What happened to that?
And we have a debt ceiling fight coming in the fall, too, by the way. Remember what happened last time with that, government shutdowns and conservative members essentially holding the debt ceiling vote hostage to deep cuts in domestic programs. So we've got a mess coming, and there's just not enough time, I think, to get done everything that needs to get done.
Mm-hmm. What's your read on health care under the Republicans, Hans?
Well, I mean, the other context that we have to consider here is that this is being considered as part of a reconciliation bill. And reconciliation bills are budget bills that are explicitly supposed to be only focused on budgetary matters. And so there are large portions of Obamacare that are not budgetary related. The reconciliation gives an advantage to Republicans in the Senate because they can pass this with 50 votes as opposed to 60. There's no filibustering on reconciliation bills. But because it's a reconciliation bill, things have to be related to the budget. And so anything that's not related to the budget can be objected to by any member of the Senate. And if the Senate parliamentarian who is nonpartisan, views this as not being a part of the budget. So, for example, the individual mandate component, that's not budgetary related. And so there's a very good chance that someone will object and that the House parliamentarian will say, yeah, that's actually not budgetary related, and so it can't be in this actual bill. And so there's a good possibility that a lot of the stuff that the House has included in that bill is impossible to get through the Senate because it violates what's called the Byrd rule, which is this rule that things have to be related explicitly to the budget. Mm-hmm. So you've got that component on top of that. I mean, indications suggest that the proceedings will start later this week or early next week. Mitch McConnell has indicated that they'll start with Section 14 in the Senate Rule 14, which indicates it allows them to bypass the committee process and bring this bill directly to the floor. So this is there's indications that this should start within this week or within next week that they'll start considering this formally on the Senate floor.
Are both of you confident that something will get passed by the Senate, make its way to the president's desk? I'm going to put you on the hot seat right now, Hans and Kedren. Will the president be signing something that resembles a repeal and replacement of Obamacare this year?
I think it's going to be hard, like Kennedy said, to keep all of the Republicans on board. And I think you're definitely going to be seeing a unified Democratic opposition to anything here. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's going to be difficult. And compound that with all of the other information and news and other things that Kennedy mentioned,
difficult.
It's going to be difficult. I think it's a distinct possibility that they could get something. It'll be different than the House bill, and they'll have to go to conference, right, to reconcile those two differences between the House bill and Senate bill. It's definitely a hard process, but I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility.
Okay, possibility, but difficult. Is that where you land too, Kedren?
I'm going to lean no, and I think maybe that Mitch McConnell, once he finds out he doesn't have the votes, will simply ditch this and move on to trying to get some tax cuts and tax reform and infrastructure done.
So, but can you overhaul the tax code, get tax cuts without this big health care reform? We've been led to believe, right,
well,
Kedren, that one depends on the next, right?
I don't think Republicans have ever needed anything else to decide to move to tax cuts. So it tends to be a winner with their caucus, and I think they could move to that. They're going to have to deal with the blowback of not fully repealing Obamacare later on with their base, but I think tax cuts are probably the most likely consensus topic.
Okay, big sigh, breathing out, deep breathing, whatever you need in these political times. Here's a final sort of reflective question for each of you. We don't have much time, but we, of course, don't know the outcome. It unravels quickly within hours. But do we know, we don't know the outcome. Do we know the historic nature of what is happening? What can be said about that, Hans?
I mean, it's hard to tell where this is actually going to lead, but I think that this will definitely be remembered as a interesting time, a time where certain norms have been changed about how the president should act and how People should engage, right? I think if you look back 70 years, you don't remember a whole lot about the Harding administration. But you do know that the Harding administration was not a particularly effective administration, and it had a whole bunch of scandal. I think that you're going to see something similar to that, that the Trump administration will be remembered for the scandals that it has, and perhaps there will be some kind of regulation and oversight as a result of that, just like there was for Warren Harding.
Kedwin Bardwell, are you going out on a historic limb of any sort?
I just think this is a radical experiment at what it means for the American public to elect someone who has no political experience to office and to see what happens. And if you want to run America like a business or like a CEO does, we're kind of seeing the tricks to that and the problems it creates in terms of the way that the government works and communication and agendas and all the roadblocks that are put in front of someone who's not the U.S. CEO, someone who has to be accountable to all these different other branches of government.
Kedwin Bardwell, thank you so much. Of Simpson College, Hans Hassel of Cornell College, for jumping in to the politics pit. Haven't ever used that term. Somehow appropriate, in my mind at least. Thanks, Hans. Thanks, Kedwin.
Thanks so much.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Ben Stanton, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow for live coverage of the Comey testimony.